This is a Triple J podcast.
Hack. Hey, it's Dave Marchese. This is the Hack Podcast. Are you hooked on Temu, like more than a million other Australians? That shopping app that offers deals that you can't believe. $10 for some headphones, a three-bedroom home for $2.50. Not quite, but almost. People are really addicted to this app, to this shopping experience. How does the business model work? Like, how are these deals so good? And should you be worried about your shopping experience being gamified? We're going to be looking at this new generation of online shopping apps and how they work later in this podcast. Also coming up, we're going to be talking the Medicare rebate gender bias, what that's about. First, though, we're covering some allegations that some of you might find upsetting.
Hack. The federal court will reopen Bruce Lemon's defamation case today
on Triple J.
In 2021, a Liberal Party staffer named Brittany Higgins did an interview with News.com and Network 10, alleging she'd been raped while working at Parliament House. Now, you're probably familiar with the name and the allegation by now, even though in the original story, he wasn't named. Higgins' former colleague, Bruce Lemon, has always maintained his innocence and pleaded not guilty when his criminal trial started in 2022. That trial was abandoned due to misconduct by someone on the jury, but since then, you may have heard Bruce Lemon's name in the news. He's suing Network 10 and journalist Lisa Wilkinson for defamation over that original interview. And well, there's been some big developments in that case that we're going to get into soon, but first, here's Shalila Medora to bring us up to speed with the case.
It was standing room only in the court as Bruce Lemon and Lisa Wilkinson sat at opposite ends of the front row.
It's November last year, and the defamation case brought on by Bruce Lemon against Channel 10 and journalist Lisa Wilkinson has begun in Sydney.
The entire focus of the first day has been the interview on the project.
All of this stems back to a TV interview 2 years earlier.
Hello and welcome to the project. Tonight,
in 2021, Liberal Party staffer Brittany Higgins spoke to Network 10 show The Project. She claimed she'd been raped in Parliament House 2 years before that, in 2019.
Mr. Lerman wasn't named, was he?
No, he wasn't. But in a letter to Network 10, he argued that his name was widely trafficked as the culprit on social media and the internet generally. He claims he was identifiable by some of the other details they included in the program.
Bruce Lemon started a defamation proceeding against Ten and Lisa Wilkinson in February 2023. Now, it's important to explain something super clearly here about this case. This isn't a criminal case testing the accusation of rape. It's a civil case about whether or not Bruce Lemon's reputation had been damaged as a result of the project interview. A criminal trial against him had been abandoned in 2022 after a juror was found to have referred to material outside of what was presented in the trial.
The breach was only discovered during a routine tidy-up of the jury room by a court sheriff when an academic paper, not in evidence in the trial, fell out of a folder.
The ACT prosecutor, Shane Drumgold, announced in December 2022 that the criminal case against Bruce Lemon had been dropped after receiving medical advice about Brittany Higgins.
I've made the difficult decision that it is no longer in the public interest to pursue a prosecution at the risk of a complainant's life.
Bruce Lemon has always denied the rape allegations against him and has not been found guilty of any wrongdoing.
Wilkinson, how did your evidence go? Are you satisfied with what was said?
The defamation trial against Ten and Wilkinson lasted for 2 months, and Justice Michael Lee was due to hand down a verdict on it today. But
Network 10 has succeeded in an 11th-hour bid to reopen its defence case in its high-profile defamation dispute with former political staffer Bruce Lemon.
Earlier this week, lawyers for Network 10 were successful in convincing the federal court to hear fresh evidence in the case. The new evidence comes from a former producer of Channel 7's Spotlight program named Taylor Auerbach.
It outlines Lerman's dealings with the 7 network during its attempt to secure an exclusive interview for the Spotlight program, and Network 10 believes could shed light on whether Lerman was responsible for leaking highly confidential information to 7, something Lerman denied in the witness box.
Drugs, prostitutes, $300 stakes.
Taylor Auerbach also claims that Channel 7 paid for perks like a golfing trip to Tasmania, illegal drugs, and tens of thousands of dollars worth of massages in order to get Bruce Lehrman's exclusive interview. Those allegations are being tested in court now.
Hack on Triple J.
Shalala Madora with that update. I want to find out more about what has happened in court today. ABC reporter Jamie McKinnell's been hearing the evidence in the federal court and he's with us now. Hey, Jamie. Thanks for coming on Hack.
Hey, Dave.
Some wild stuff heard in court today. Can you take us through some of the bigger stuff?
Yeah, sure. There were certainly a lot of allegations being thrown around. And the real point of interest today was a witness, Taylor Auerbach. Now, he's a former producer for Channel 7. He worked on the Spotlight program. And he has come into this as a witness because Spotlight had an exclusive sit-down interview with Bruce Lehrman. So Taylor Auerbach has already made some claims in court documents, affidavits that have been tendered to the court earlier this week, which kind of detailed how he and his colleagues went about convincing Bruce Lehrman to do that sit-down interview. Now, he's claimed in these court documents, and again today in his evidence, that that process included financial benefits for Bruce Lehrman, including reimbursements for things like the engagement of sex workers and illicit drugs. Now, outside of the court process, Channel 7 has said that it didn't authorise or condone any of those alleged financial benefits. But today, during his evidence, Taylor Auerbach recalled a meeting with Bruce Lehrman where they had dinner in January 2023. Now, he's claimed that Bruce Lehrman allegedly purchased a bag of cocaine, and later on, he discussed taking part in a Spotlight interview and also expressed a desire to order sex workers to a hotel in Sydney, began Googling a series of websites to try and make that happen. And Taylor Auerbach has also claimed that Bruce Lehrman agreed to be in a Spotlight interview as long as they didn't ask him about what happened in Canberra. Taylor Auerbach has said that that seemed a concerning kind of request, and he was taken aback by that. And he's also alleged that Seven reimbursed Mr. Lehrman for money for those illicit drugs and sex worker services that were allegedly a part of that meeting in Sydney. Now, he's also claimed that he resigned after putting thousands of dollars worth of charges on a Seven corporate credit card. In a resignation letter, he claimed to his employer that those charges had nothing to do with work, but now in court, he's claimed that wasn't actually an accurate reflection of the situation.
Right. I mean, there was also a video played in court today, right, showing Taylor Auerbach destroying golf clubs?
Yeah, this is a little bit strange, but it comes into the picture because one of the main lines of attack when Taylor Auerbach was being cross-examined was that basically he's come to court to do as much damage to his former colleagues and former employer as he possibly can. Now, one of those former colleagues is a man called Steve Jackson, who was also part of the Spotlight program. He was actually the owner of the golf clubs which Taylor Auerbach recorded himself destroying. So that video came into the picture because Bruce Lehrman's lawyer wanted to show that Taylor Auerbach has a level of hatred towards his former colleagues. So he played that video in court where Taylor Auerbach is breaking these golf clubs across his knee with a pretty angry expression on his face. But Taylor Auerbach has said that that video was actually a parody of what Mr. Jackson had earlier recorded in a different video. And he claimed that though that it seemed to be, sort of a parody and needed to be played alongside the original for you to fully understand that it was him sort of riffing off something that had previously happened.
Right. Okay. There is a lot going on here. A lot of evidence heard in the federal court today. Jamie, is it unusual that the judge reopened this case to hear this evidence?
Yeah, it's extremely unusual, and particularly this late in the game. I mean, today was meant to be the day that we were going to hear Justice Michael Lee's final decision in the whole defamation case. But a spanner has been thrown into the works because Ten, as the defendant, made this last-minute application on the weekend to reopen the case because of this new evidence coming from people like Taylor Auerbach. So it's extremely unusual that a judge, days away from giving a pretty major decision in a case of significant interest like this, would then agree to, reopen the case and hear from a new witness. But part of the test was, whether this new evidence is relevant enough to an issue in the case to be explored. And I think the issues here, which, this new evidence is going to, are questions of credit in terms of Bruce Lehrman, and also questions of a possible breach or misuse of the process here.
So do we know when the judgment's going to come down now? Like, has that been pushed back until next week? Is there more evidence to be heard?
It certainly looks like it's going to be delayed. There was a suggestion earlier this week that the judge might be able to get to his decision at some point next week, but he said today that he might need some more time given the amount of new evidence that we're hearing. So it might be, even later than next week, because we're still not finished with Taylor Auerbach's cross-examination. The court's finished for today, obviously, but he will come back tomorrow at about 10:15 for more cross-examination and probably be grilled a lot more about what he has alleged in various court documents that he has tendered.
And what are the possible outcomes here?
Well, the two major outcomes will be obviously whether Bruce Lehrman has succeeded in suing the Ten Network for defamation. But the strange thing is here that this is actually the case at its centre isn't about the Spotlight interview at all. It's about an interview on the Ten Network that Brittany Higgins did where she alleged she was raped in Parliament House. She didn't name anyone, but Bruce Lehrman has claimed that he was identifiable in that interview. Of course, he's always denied that he raped Brittany Higgins in Parliament House, and his criminal trial in the ACT was abandoned after juror misconduct with no findings against him. So the two major outcomes will be either Bruce Lehrman succeeds in his defamation claim and then might be entitled to damages, or if Ten has successfully defended it, then essentially the case has been defended and he will not be entitled to any damages.
Well, hey, we know you're going to keep us across it. We appreciate you taking the time to chat with us now. Thank you so much, reporter Jamie McKinnell. Thanks for coming on Hack.
Thanks, Dave.
Hack. We were concerned about really quite a structural bias in the healthcare system against women.
On Triple J.
Are women being ripped off with Medicare rebates? Because some doctors think they are. They say a Medicare gender bias is costing women more, that rebates are bigger for men who are getting less complex procedures. I'm keen to hear what you think of this. So, like, have you been shocked by what is or isn't covered by Medicare? Do you think there is a gender bias? Message in 0439 757 555. Our reporter Claudia Long's been looking into it.
You've heard of the gender pay gap, and according to some medical specialists, there's a gender Medicare gap too.
So what the Medicare benefit schedule shows us very clearly is that there is a gap, a Medicare gap between what is reimbursed for women and what is reimbursed for men.
That's Dr. Nisha Cott, the Vice President of the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists. She reckons the Medicare rebate for a lot of procedures that women get aren't as generous as the rebates for medical procedures specifically for men. As in, people with uteruses are getting less money back in their bank accounts from Medicare than people who don't have uteruses, and that the fact that they literally have more organs is actually playing into it.
So they definitely should have a higher Medicare rebate than a scan that doesn't require that level of expertise or that amount of time.
She says a female internal pelvic ultrasound gets a lower rebate than an ultrasound of a male scrotum, even though it's much more invasive and time-consuming for both the doctor and for the patient.
A scrotal scan is looking at one organ, which is easily seen and, doesn't need to have a huge deal of time or expertise when you're looking just at one organ, versus looking at a baby with multiple organs where you're trying to make sure that every single organ is developing the way it should.
So, Medicare rebates. How the hell do they work? Well, the government recommends how much a procedure should cost, and that recommended fee is then listed on what's called the Medicare Benefits Schedule, or MBS. It then pays a percentage of that recommended fee back to the patient. That's called a rebate. The higher the recommended fee, the higher the rebate. But doctors can charge more than that recommended fee if the cost of performing the procedure is actually higher, and that difference or gap is paid for by you, the patient. But heaps of women's procedures cost more because they're more complicated. But the recommended fee isn't any higher.
Pelvic ultrasound for women, much, much more complex, but no difference in fees, really, than if you have... So for a woman, you have to have a transabdominal and transvaginal to get a really good ultrasound of the abdomen. For men, you just have to have a very simple transabdominal. There's no extra money involved for the clinicians who are undertaking those much higher or much more complex much more involved scans.
Sarah White is the CEO of women's health organisation Jean Hales. She reckons gender bias is baked into the Medicare rebate system and wants it to be reviewed.
So there's man equals woman equity, but there's also some equity around those additional procedures or additional complexity that a woman requires because she has more stuff going on in her pelvis, for example, that then becomes worn as an out-of-pocket expense.
The Australian College of Midwives also reckons that their mostly female workforce in the profession are facing their own gender disadvantage, where they're not getting paid enough from Medicare to look after women and their babies. Here's the college's chief midwife, Alison Weatherstone.
One example I can give is a postnatal appointment at 6 weeks for a midwife to attend a mother and baby is combined, so there is only one opportunity to achieve funding, whereas if the woman goes and sees a medical professional, they can actually claim for both the mother and the baby.
The groups are all calling on Health Minister Mark Butler to back a gendered review of Medicare.
I would absolutely like the Health Minister to put his weight behind this. It's unfair the way the current system is, and I'd like to see every single party in Parliament get behind it.
He didn't directly respond to my questions this week over whether or not he'd actually support a review, but he did tell Breakfast Telly this morning that there is sexism at play.
There is real structural bias in the system. You know, we've started to work on this by opening endometriosis and pelvic pain clinics across Australia. That was one gap in the healthcare system identified by our work, but there is much more to do, and we're not going to be able to deal with them overnight. Many of them are deep structural issues, but we are determined to improve women's equality in the healthcare system.
But are they determined to spend money on it? The minister had nice things to say about the story.
The position that Claudia Long has written about, I think very well in her articles, that there is real structural bias in the system.
But still hasn't committed to a review and didn't say whether disparities would be addressed.
Hack on Triple J.
Claudia Long there, and you can read the full story on ABC News Online. A lot of messages coming through. Tash in Melbourne says, the Medicare gender discrimination is so real. There is a medication that I need to take that's going to stop me from being infertile at 24. It's not even on the PBS, making it $150 every menstrual cycle. Look, we'll keep you updated as Claudia keeps covering these massive health stories.
Hack, can everyone do me a favour and tell me what Temu is?
On Triple J. Temu, what do you think? What's the strangest thing you've bought on Temu? I know there's some weird stuff. Tell me, 0439757555. You're not unusual if you're using this platform, even if you're buying strange things. More than 1 million Australians are. Who can resist the ridiculously cheap prices, the fun spinning wheels to get a better deal? But the cheap prices have got some people suspicious that there's even some concerns about data security we should be worried about. So what is driving Temu's success? Ariana Lucente has been looking into it.
I bought a bunch of stuff from Temu.
You see my massive haul that I got in from Temu.
Let's do a haul and see if it's worth the hype.
A new online shopping platform has hit the Aussie market in a big way, and it comes in the form of a bright orange parcel. Actually, make that heaps of them. The market research company Roy Morgan reckons 1.2 million Australians shop with Temu each month. Oh, and one other thing to say here. There's a weird dispute about whether it's actually pronounced Temu. Temu, Temu, I'm shopping like a billionaire. Anyway, Temu has only been around for a year in Australia, but Roy Morgan estimates it's raking in $1.3 billion in annual sales. So, what are people buying on the app?
Some sticker sheets,
a glass takeaway cup,
car phone holder thing.
Like the most randomest stuff that you don't think you need, but you actually do.
Temu prices are cheap. Like, really, really cheap. Right now, I could buy some wireless headphones for $10.04 or a pair of hair clips for just 70 cents. So where did Temu come from? Well, Temu was founded in the US in September 2022, but it's actually owned by PDD Holdings, a company which already has a similar app called Pinduoduo in China. Temu means team up, price down. It basically links sellers and products directly to buyers, cutting out the middleman to generate massive savings. Just add a cost of living crisis to the mix and it's enough to make a business like that soar.
Some people are really struggling. The conversation is not about high quality goods. Every conversation is peppered with discussions around cost of living.
Temu is actually operating at a loss. And that's part of its strategy, as Michelle Levine, the CEO of Roy Morgan, explains.
The aggressive desire to have eyeballs is probably something that we've seen in the tech space previously, just wanting to become ubiquitous before they start building a model that they can make money on.
But the cheap prices have got some customers a little suspicious. People online are alleging all sorts of things.
So my bank details got sold to the black market by Temu.
Temu, extremely unethical app.
Any information that you give them, they then sell to black market data miners.
Okay, so there's a lot of theories swirling around on TikTok, alleging that Temu isn't handling data safely. So is there anything to this? Well, it turns out there are actually two class action lawsuits in the US. One accusing Temu of not keeping customers' private information secure, and another alleging the company collects private data on its customers deceptively. So if you're a customer here in Australia, do you need to be worried?
I think it's as safe as any other online website that we access.
Dr. Arathi Arakala researches and teaches mathematics at RMIT, specialising in cybersecurity. She's read through Temu's privacy policy, and she hasn't seen signs that Temu is collecting more data than any other e-commerce app. And what about those black market claims?
I don't think a company as reputed as Temu would do something like that intentionally. It definitely shares information with its partners in order to be able to deliver its service. We don't know how safely they are storing the data.
I got in touch with Temu and they sent me a long statement saying Temu is misunderstood. Temu reckons concerns over its data practices stem from a lack of understanding of its competitive pricing. When I asked about hanging onto people's card details, Temu told me they follow something called the principle of minimality. They reckon they only use customer data for specific justified scenarios. They also told me such data is routinely collected by most, as in they reckon everyone else does this too. And just on that point, Dr. Arathi Arakala has some general principles.
Make sure that we have a separate email address for all of the online shopping that we do. Do not store your credit card details on these websites. Instead, you might want to use a prepaid card.
Good advice, whether you're shopping on Temu, Temu, or literally anywhere else.
Hack on Triple J.
Yeah, Ariana Lucente there. Some messages coming through. Someone says, more crap you don't need. Brad in Newey says, you can buy lots of board games off Temu, but they're all fakes. And someone else, Elon in Melbourne, says, a data breach has always been a worry of mine, but a greater concern is for the people making those products. Yeah, lots of people are wondering about the ethical considerations here. I want to get into Temu a bit more and other apps like this. Natika Garg is a marketing professor at UNSW. She just looks at consumer behaviour, that kind of thing, and she's with us to chat. Natika, thanks for coming on Hack.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Do you think we're going to see a boom in this style of shopping app, things like Temu?
I think at least in the short term, yes. It might settle in the long run, but in the short run, especially given the cost of living crisis, I think it's helping companies like that, which offer low-priced products, because it allows consumers to engage in a little bit of retail therapy, a little bit of, you know, sometimes necessities as well, but not spending or splurging a lot.
You'll often hear experts talk about the gamification of shopping. Yeah. Can you explain what that means?
It's a little bit like where the design of the app itself is, the intention is to engage the consumer and get them to spend more time. You know, so I've talked a lot about how supermarkets, the physical shops, have tactics they use to make consumers spend more time in the store and as a result end up spending more. It's the same principle, obviously different tactics that websites or apps like Temu are using, because they are drawing you in. And once you're in, It's almost like social media, right? You just keep scrolling, just keep looking at products, and in the process, they're hoping you'll end up buying.
There's also the different elements of when you're shopping on an app like this, the pressure to buy something. Like if you express interest in something, you click on something, all of a sudden, there's this intense urgency to get it before it's gone. Is that another tactic?
In a way, yes. So they might offer promotions on it. They might say you get a voucher for it. So Temu especially is doing that, a lot of price discounting, price promotions at the front end. So even as you open the app, it'll start, you have this voucher. Or, you know, if you sign up, you get this discount, which is quite substantial, you know, if we consider the percentage, so it might be 20% or 30% or whatever. And further, like you said, if you indicate any interest at all, then they not only sort of continue following you on that, but they say, oh, similar to that thing that you just looked at, here are some other things that other consumers have found relevant. And so suddenly you have that. And with advertising on Facebook and things like that, which tie in. So just try looking for Temu on your computer. And I bet the next time you open your Facebook, you'll have advertisement from Temu in your Facebook feed. So, you know, there is sort of a synergistic relationship because so much of our behavior online is being tracked and they feed off of each other, right? So, okay, you went there, you get the ad, you get the promotions and so on.
Is it all changing the way that we are shopping? Is it changing consumer behaviours, this style of shopping through social media, this gamification through apps?
Interesting question. I'm not sure if it's changing because I think the underlying psychology is still there. But like I said, the tactics are evolving given that retailers have much more information and much more targeted information at a very cheap rate, if you will, right? It is easier for retailers to capture our attention in that sense and sort of keeping us hooked.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Professor Natika Garg from UNSW about these apps that we're seeing that are proving really popular in Australia, like Temu, and also just online shopping experiences more broadly. Natika, should we be skeptical of some of the claims? Like if you see a product that's advertised as, you know, 80% off, 90% off, and you look at it, it is a really good price, but then the original price, it seems pretty expensive. Was it ever actually that price? Is that something that we should be thinking twice about as a consumer?
Absolutely. And I mean, things we know that there are instances where retailers, although there are regulations that control this, but retailers can say, oh, look, we are giving a 30% discount. But what they have done is they have indicated what we call the reference price. They've indicated the MSRP, the maximum retail price, which maybe they've never sold the product on, right? So they can do that. But with these online kind of apps, there is even less regulation. So where is that price coming from? Because if you look at Temu, for example, a lot of their products are not standard brands that we are aware of. So yes, you can get maybe like a slipper or a shoe or whatever, but it's not a standard brand where consumers have a good idea of how much it should be at. And as you said, the prices seem very attractive and very low, but there will be a learning period, I think, for consumers because they will realize that to a certain extent, it might be a good deal or okay deal, but on the other hand, they're not getting the quality of a $80 product or $100 product or whatever they think they might be getting.
This is a question without notice, but have you used Temu, Professor Garg?
I have actually once. I did. I finally gave in. I was so hesitant to actually download the app. So I did install it because that's the only way you can order. I installed it. I ordered some stuff. Wasn't very impressed with the quality. Quickly uninstalled the app. But it was quite fast. You know, the process was seamless, at least in delivery terms. You ordered the things. They came to you. I didn't like the quality much. So I'm like, okay, I don't think I want to go down this path. And I uninstalled the app quite quickly because all of these apps are super invasive, right? They keep looking at what you're doing and capturing a lot of details.
So you're speaking from some experience there. You've seen how it works. Look, we know that they're hugely popular, and especially as life is really tough at the moment, the cost of living pressures that people are under, it's no wonder that everyone's trying to get a good bargain. We appreciate your take on all of that. Professor Natika Garg from UNSW, thanks for coming on Hack.
Thank you so much, Dave. I enjoyed it.
Hack on Triple J.
And that's all we've got time for on the Hack podcast for now. I'll catch you next time.